Before we move on to our next position breakdown, we're going to get the final score predictions from everybody. Scott, I know you're on the next position breakdown, so we'll get your score prediction later on. Right. We'll start with you, Brooks. What's your final score prediction, Alabama or Auburn?
I don't think this game is going to be really close. I've been saying that the whole season. Even though Auburn's played, you know, really well up to this point, I think Alabama's going to wind up winning the game 31-14. It's going to be big. The crowd's going to be rocking down there. You know, it's going to be probably it's the biggest game in this rivalry's history. But this is the first time these two teams have ever played to decide the SEC West champion. So I think Alabama's going to have to overcome all that emotion and stuff and the crowd, and they will, and they'll wind up taking over this game in the second half and winning by 17 points.
Final score, Avery?
Well, I don't think it's going to be a blowout exactly. I think it's a rivalry game. Both of these teams are going to come out fired up and playing well. But I think Alabama is going to run away with it in the second half. They're going to wear Auburn down like they do. And I think the final score is going to be 28-10.
As we continue on with Crimson Tide Game Day podcast edition, we're going to let go of Brooks Carter and Avery Nelson. Thanks to them for joining us. Scott Braswell is going to stay with us as we continue on to break down the offensive line and the defensive line in this 2013 Iron Bowl. Scott Braswell is going to stay with us to join Stephen Smith and Seth Juniak here on the Crimson Tide Game Day podcast to break down the offensive line and the defensive line. We'll go back to you, Scott. The emergence of A'shaun Robinson has created a serious problem for the Alabama defensive line because it's almost tough to identify who the top three are, especially with Jonathan Allen coming on the defensive end position as well. Who is the best starting three for Alabama, not only for the season as a whole, but for this Auburn game in particular?
Well, I'm going to go with – I know A'shaun Robinson has played well, but I think he's good in his current role. I'm going to go with Ed Stinson, Jeffrey Pagan, and Brandon Ivory as my starting three, so to speak, because I think it's got to really just break the life when you take one of those guys out, you bring in A'shaun Robinson, and there's no drop-off. That's got to be so disheartening for the Auburn offensive line. So I think he's good in his spot right now. You have a lot of depth. You know, it kind of is – I guess, subject to change, so to speak. So I'll go with those three for right now. I think they can do a lot of damage.
So you're saying Nick Saban knows something about personnel? Nah, I don't believe that.
Never.
I don't believe that at all. What do you think, Seth?
You kind of touched on the word of the day there, Scott, and that is depth. I mean, that's really a thing about this Nick Saban defense and really the Alabama defense as a whole is the depth of it. Personally, I really like A'shaun, but I don't like him on the end. I like him coming off as, like, a nose tackle. He has the size for it, and I think that, you know, Brandon Ivory hasn't really been too extraordinary. I would like to see Nick Saban test that a little bit with A'shaun at the nose. But Pagan and Stinson, they've been really solid. I don't think you really need to change too much there. But you're absolutely right, Brett. I think Jonathan Allen is a guy who has really impressed me, especially like the last game against Chattanooga. I noticed him a lot. He was in a lot of plays. And really, I think, though, that Stinson and Pagan are the guys.
Round us out, Steven.
I completely echo what Scott and Seth just mentioned, but I like A'shaun Robinson as well as having Adrian Hubbard as part of that three as well with Xavier Dixon. When you look at A'shaun Robinson, that blocked kick that he had against Chattanooga really sparked something with our Alabama defense. And Adrian Hubbard, I still believe that if he's able to get it and understand how to be an effective pass rusher, I would use him in this game alongside of Xavier Dixon.
Now let's go to the Auburn defensive line. We'll start with you this time, Seth. You labeled the word of the day to be depth, and you've got that nail on the head with Auburn's defensive line. The fun part about Auburn's defensive line is they've got three freshmen, true freshmen, nonetheless, in their depth chart, in their two-deep depth chart on the defensive line. That includes Carl Lawson and Montrevis Adams. Are you buying the hype around these young guys making all the plays they've made early in their careers, or is there something that needs to be figured out with this bunch?
Yes and no. I kind of buy Auburn's efficacy as a defensive line as a whole, but the young guys, I don't really think they factor in too much, at least with this Alabama Iron Bowl matchup. Just because Ladarius Owens, Gabe Wright, those guys both, you know, they're the starters, they're juniors, you know, they've been around for a while. Chiefly, if I'm buying any one guy on this Auburn defensive line, it's Dee Ford. Mm-hmm. Dee Ford is an absolute man. He's probably the best defensive player on the field, to be quite honest, especially like last week when Auburn played Georgia. I distinctly remember I watched that game, and Dee Ford had a pass pressure on the first one, a tackle for loss on the second play, and then a sack on the third play. He's a guy who can take over the game, and You know, you can bet that Kirby Smart and Nick Saban, or not Kirby Smart, but, you know, Nick Saban and company know where this guy is at all times.
Mm-hmm. He also had the game-winning sack on Johnny Manziel on the road at Texas A&M earlier this year. Senior makes a lot of big plays. Steven, what are your thoughts on this Auburn defensive line?
I think they're very talented, and like Seth mentioned, not just D4. You look at the leader of this team being Nosa Igwe, the senior, one of the captains of this defense, can put the hand on the ground, can rush the passer, can pretty much stuff the run as well. And I think with him and D4 playing on that defensive line, they're going to look to not only stuff Alabama's run, but kind of rattle A.J. a bit, because you saw in the Mississippi State game, when you get pressure to A.J. McCarron, he is prone to make mistakes, and there's prone to get some dirt on that crimson jersey when you pressure him.
Round us out, Scott.
Well, I think I'm going to agree with Seth. I think D. Ford is really the leader of this team. And you look at where the position he was in last year, I read an article on him, how he had a very high draft stock last year, 3-9 season, could have very easily have skipped out. He came back, and he's made a big difference.
Yeah, much now, like his teammate Lemonnier.
Exactly.
To do that,
exactly. And so now he's 10-1 and has a chance for a potential SEC championship. So good things come to those that wait, I guess. But, I mean, this guy, he is their leader in sacks. They really go to him in times of need, so to speak, and they're going to do the same thing in one of the biggest Iron Bowls, I think the biggest Iron Bowl in the history of the rivalry. I think he's the guy.
Let's go from the defensive lines in this matchup to the offensive lines in this matchup, and we'll start with you, Steven. How much credit does the Auburn offensive line get in Auburn's rushing ability recently? Obviously, the running game of the Tigers taking over the talk of this rivalry, at least the 2013 edition. How much credit does their offensive line deserve?
Well, Britt, they deserve a ton of credit, and it all starts with, you know, Gus Malzahn's ability to trust them to open up the holes for guys like Nick Marshall, Ricardo Lewis, and also with Trey Mason. The reason why Auburn is rushing third in the nation with 320.3 yards a game is because of Malzahn's ability to put the beef up front and tell his guys, look, block everybody off the football, create those holes, allow our guys to get 5 to 6 to 7 yards a pop, and create those second and short, third and short, first down opportunities for us to establish the run and get the pass. Tags, the offensive line of Auburn deserves a ton of credit.
Scott?
I think the same thing. I think really a lot of it's about Gus Malzahn and really the strategy he puts into it, because he's really kind of an offensive mad scientist when you think about it. He was really one of the first guys to really come on the scene with the no huddle and getting the plays in every 7-8 seconds and really keeping the play simple as well. But I'll give them maybe about 40% of the credit, because, again, you do have this physical running back we talked about in the last segment with, you know, Trey Mason, Cameron Artis Payne, and even Nick Marshall, those kind of guys. So I think it's a little bit of both, and you have to have that balance, because if one is kind of off, then nothing's going to happen. You have to have the offensive linemen creating the holes, and you also have to have some good running backs that can find them and still get yards after contact. They're one of the best teams in the SEC with yards after contact, given how fast they are and how big they are. I think that's a big key.
Round it out, Seth.
Well, I think they deserve a good bit of credit, especially with Reese Dismukes. He's garnered Remington attention, and really as the center, he's really that kind of quarterback of that offensive line. And really, I'm just going to say something really bit. I was an offensive lineman in high school, and really one of the things that I'm a little interested in the fact that their running game is a lot better, because run blocking is a harder skill to do than pass blocking. Where pass blocking, you just got to keep the guy in front of you. You have a lot of space to work with. When you run block, there's a lot of very specific assignments. You know, push this guy here, open this hole here, you know, pull there. It's really, that's one of the things that shouldn't be understated in this, you know, Auburn's offensive line. They've, you know, the fact that they are a better run team than pass, you know, run pass team, says a lot about the linemen, I think, and really just their ability to do this.
We're going to stay with the offensive linemen and go to Alabama's offensive linemen. We'll start with you, Seth. We just got done gushing about Auburn's defensive line. Alabama's offensive line is the one that has to block them. Which one of those five starters, the Quanjos, Steen, Kelly, and Shepard, has the biggest matchup problem on their hands in this game? Who's to watch?
Well, I'm going to stick to my guns about who I gushed in the first place in D. Ford, and really this game, a lot of it will be dedicated, you know, predicated on how Cyrus Quanjo does in guarding D. Ford. Really, to be quite honest, D. Ford is the guy who can take over this game for Auburn, and really, as we've kind of seen at times, A.J. McCarron really... he's a little suspect under pressure, I think. I don't have the against the blitz numbers in front of me, but just watching A.J. McCarron under the blitz, he does get very, you know, heads on fire type thing, and really this game's a different game altogether if A.J. McCarron has a blitz to worry about. And if D. Ford's in his face every play, this is a completely different game. So Cyrus Quanjo needs to make sure that his quarterback is upright.
Steven?
I'm not going to go with Cyrus Quandjo. I'm actually going to say the younger Quandjo, Ari Quandjo, has a lot to worry about because of the fact that you're going to a hostile environment. He being a freshman, you're going into the plains of Jordan-Hare Stadium. The Eagles are going to be flying around. It's nerve-wracking. It's one of the biggest Iron Bowls today. I think Ari Quandjo is going to have a lot to deal with coming from guys like Seth mentioned, Deep Ford, Nosa Igwe, and this Auburn defensive line.
Round us out, Scott.
I'm actually say Ryan Kelly. I know that we both talk about the Quandjos because Auburn has a lot of movement on defense, and Ellis Johnson's a very good defensive mind, and you look at how much they've improved from last year. I know they still give up a ton of offensive yards, but I think really he's going to have to make those last-second calls when Auburn's doing a lot of switches on the defensive line and whatnot. He's going to be very critical. You have to have – you saw what happened to good center last year that Barrett Jones was for Alabama. He's going to have a good performer. He's going to have to make a lot of really split-second decisions and keep the pressure off of A.J. Because I agree with you. I think sometimes under pressure – because he hasn't been under pressure that much, it's kind of tough to kind of go through it. It's kind of tough to simulate that through practice. So I agree. I'm going to say Ryan Kelly for the time being, but certainly whoever's on D Ford or the movement is certainly going to have their hands full as well.
Before we wrap up our final position breakdown on the podcast edition of Crimson Tide Game Day, we're going to get our final score predictions from these three. Seth Juniak is going to be with us later on in the show, so we'll hold yours for later on. We'll get yours, Scott, and yours, Steven. Scott, give us your final score prediction in this Iron Bowl.
I'm going to say Alabama 28, Auburn 13.
28-13 from Scott Braswell. Stephen Smith, your final score.
I'm going to say Alabama 35, Auburn 28.
35-28 in favor of the Crimson Tide. I want to thank Scott Braswell, Stephen Smith, and Seth Juniak for joining us here on the podcast edition of Crimson Tide Game Day. We're going to continue on and get to some of the other games going on in the world of college football. Believe it or not, they're still playing college football outside of Auburn, Alabama today. Seth's going to help us break those down with some other members of the 90.7, the capstone across all the conferences of college football. He's going to be joined by Xavier Brosfield and Cole Thompson in to help us break down some of the other games going on in college football as we wrap up the Crimson Tide Game Day podcast edition for the Alabama-Auburn game. And it's rivalry week in college football, and that's going to be the theme as we start with the battle for the victory bell between USC and UCLA. Had UCLA not lost to Arizona State last week, this game would have decided who won the Pac-12 South, but that's all null and void now. UCLA and USC only battling for pride in the victory bell. Of course, Ed Orgeron could be auditioning for a head coaching job. We'll get to that storyline later on in the offseason, but for now, we'll start with you, Seth. Give us your thoughts and prediction on this USC-UCLA game.
I think it's a little unfair to say that this is just a pride matchup because USC, they can secure a 10-win season by extension, a BCS bowl bid, an at-large bid if they win this one. Both of these teams kind of got dismantled by the Sun Devils and Sparky of Arizona State there. But I really think that USC, like you said, Ed Orgeron, they have a lot more to play for than UCLA. And really, they kind of, on paper to me, they strike me as the better team. But this is a game to watch just because there are a bunch of difference makers, just game-changing difference makers with the Marquise Lee of USC, Anthony Barr and Brett Hundley on UCLA as well. But frankly, I think USC wins it handily at 28-14.
Exactly.
I think USC will win it too, but I think it'll be a lot closer than people expect. I think with UCLA reeling in the past couple of weeks, everybody's kind of thinking that this is going to be a kind of a cakewalk for USC since they're on a roll as of late. But I think Brett Hundley is I really think he's a good quarterback. I think he just doesn't have a lot of help around his offensive line's been dinged up most of the year. So I think Brett Hundley will keep it a game. I think it'll be somewhere around 35-30 for USC though.
Round us out, Cole.
All right, well, before anything, this really is not just a pride game, but this is also an audition for Ed Orgeron to see where he's going to end up next season. Will he stay in Southern California working as a coordinator or maybe even the head coach of USC? Or will a team that is about ready to fire their coach maybe pick him up? This is a team led by, of course, Cody Kessler at quarterback. He is throwing 65% of his passes, 303 attempts, 197 have been completed. He's thrown 15 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. Of course, most of those touchdowns have gone to his top receiver in Marquise Lee. He has over 600 yards in receptions this year. And I honestly don't think that this is USC's game. I'm going to go against the spread. I'm going to pick UCLA. I think Brett Hundley is a phenomenal quarterback. You look at his completion rating at 67.9, 22 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. Not the best scores, but at the same time, look at what he's working with. Not the best receivers. However, with that defense led by outside linebacker, maybe first-round draft pick in Anthony Barr, I think that UCLA will get the score done 27-24.
We go to the Big Ten for the Battle of the Land Grant Trophy between Michigan and between Minnesota and Michigan State. I got ahead of myself, or behind myself, I should say. That game happened a while ago. Minnesota has one of the best running attacks in the Big Ten. On the other hand, Michigan State has statistically the best defense in the nation. I'm sure I'm going to have pitchforks and torches thrown at my apartment now that I'm suggesting that a defense is better than Alabama's. But we'll start with you, Xavier. Michigan State's defense has won them all of their games they've won this year as they stand 10-1, already locked up the championship of the Big Ten Legends Division, going to play Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. Do they beat Minnesota today?
Well, guys, I'm one of the biggest fans of Michigan State outside of an Alabama fan, of course. But I love the way Michigan State plays. And I saw it against Northwestern game. Their offense can play, too. So I think they'll win easily over Minnesota, who is kind of an underdog, you know, in the game. But, you know, I think they're a little better than people think. But I think Michigan State wins this one pretty easily. And I think Michigan State will actually go on to do something in the Rose Bowl, because I think they can take out Ohio State. But for this game, I say somewhere around 30-10.
You're absolutely right. Michigan State's offensive emergence has been one of the bigger storylines in the Big Ten in the last few weeks or so. Cole, what are your thoughts on this one?
I'm going to definitely agree with Xavier on this one. This is a team, how you said earlier, has won every single game on their defense. However, this game is going to be based off their offense. Connor Cook playing that quarterback, almost 2,000 passing yards, 16 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. He has done a great job taking over for Kirk Cousins the past few years. But I think the main guy who you need to look for in this game going against that defense that Jerry Kill has set up is Jeremy Langford, the running back of Michigan State. Over 1,000 yards rushing this season, 15 touchdowns with the longest of 40 yards. Expect him to cut to the outside and run right back up the middle on a lot of option plays or halfback dives. Final score prediction, I'm going to go with 40-17.
Trying to replace Le'Veon Bell as the number one running back for the Spartans. Round us out, Seth.
Yeah, you mentioned Le'Veon Bell. That's actually, I grew up watching a lot of Big Ten. So, I mean, Michigan State's a team that I had always watched. My dad's a Michigan fan. I'd always see the Michigan State game. I'd always see the Ohio State game, Notre Dame, yada, yada. But Michigan State, their defense has been their selling point. But, I mean, I grew up with watching Kirk Cousins and, you know, Le'Veon Bell. So, really, their offense isn't suspect at all to me. And looking at Minnesota, though, Minnesota's been a feel-good story in all of college football, really. Jerry Kill's been able to revitalize that team. They already have their best record in the past 9 years with 8 wins. And, really, they can only get better. But we are talking about Michigan State. As we've kind of already alluded to, they're perennially a defensively stout powerhouse. And, you know, they're a BCS contender out of the Big Ten, which we could argue is the not-so-Big Ten with how the conference has been doing. But, you know, again, you can never sleep on Sparty. This is a good team, and I think that they are far and away one of the best teams to come out of the Big Ten. So I think they drop a big one on Minnesota. No offense to Minnesota. Michigan State's just the better team. I think they win 45-10.
Got to agree with you. I'm going to pick Michigan State in that one. We're going to stay with the Big Ten and go from a team that defends the run well to a team that runs the ball well, the Badgers. Playing Penn State in this one, the Badgers hosting the Nittany Lions in this one. Wisconsin's ability to run the ball is going to go up against the pro-style offense put together by Bill O'Brien under freshman quarterback Christian Hackenberg, who has had his bright moments and had his not-so-bright moments. Of course, one of his brighter moments coming in the 4-overtime win over Michigan in Happy Valley earlier this year. We'll start with you on this one, Cole. Which one prevails, Wisconsin's run game or Christian Hackenberg?
All right. Well, I thought at the very beginning of the season this was going to be Wisconsin's off year after losing Brett Bielema to Arkansas. I thought that they were not going to find a leader and a coach, and they have. This guy who has stepped in is doing a great job, and that pro-style offense that Bill O'Brien runs against Wisconsin's defense is going to be a great game to watch. But Christian Hackenberg is a freshman going into Wisconsin, a team that is getting ranked and being looked at for a BCS championship game, and you're going against the probably number two running back in the nation behind Kadeem Carey from Arizona in Melvin Gordon, Monty Ball's replacement. He has over 1,000 yards rushing, 12 touchdowns, averaging 8.2 yards a carry. That is almost a first down every play. I don't think that him going in here, especially with wide receivers like Jared Erebus, Jacob Pearson, and James White, all averaging for 4 touchdowns each this season. My final prediction is going to be Wisconsin beats Penn State 24-17.
It's funny how Gary Anderson, going from Utah State to Wisconsin, had 3 or 4 wideouts on the field basically at all times at Utah State. Now he's got the downhill running game working very well at Camp Randall Stadium. They're loving it, the Badgers are. We'll see if they can beat Penn State. What are your thoughts on that one, Seth?
Really, looking at Penn State first, they've been a tough team to gauge this season. Since week two, they have not won or lost in consecutive weeks, much like the Jets have in the NFL. So really, like, since week two, they've won one, lost one, won one, lost one, won one, lost one. So really, that's about as, just back and forth as you can get. I say that because, judging by that pattern, they beat Wisconsin this week. which I really am not sure, because Wisconsin is a freak call against Arizona State and a touchdown against Ohio State from being undefeated. You know, they haven't lost a step since, you know, Anderson has replaced Bielema, as we've already kind of alluded to. And as much as I like Christian Hackenberg, who has looked incredible at times, not just good, he's looked incredible. And Bill O'Brien, he's done great things with his program since last year. But, I mean, it is at Camp Randall Stadium. It's at home. Wisconsin, you know, I think they take it comfortably at home, 35-14.
I can't imagine how differently we judge both of those teams if the correct call is made in that situation between Wisconsin and Arizona State. Round us out, Xavier.
And I agree. I agree with exactly what Seth said. I believe Ohio State is really lucky to have to have faced this Wisconsin offense earlier in the season when things weren't as clicking as they were now. But I believe this is just going to be too much James White, Melvin Gordon, and Joel Staive, guys. He's not a Russell Wilson, but he doesn't have to be in this offense with the way they run the ball. So I believe Wisconsin will win this one fairly easily, maybe around the 30-10 range as well.
We'll start with you on the next one, Seth, as we go to the Battle of the Palmetto State between South Carolina and Clemson. I think some of South Carolina's postseason hopes mostly revolve around what Missouri does against Texas A&M. We'll get to that game later if they want to get to Atlanta in the SEC championship game. Still got quite a rivalry game with the Clemson Tigers, and I love how Dabo Sweeney and Steve Spurrier have learned to hate each other over the years. Brought a lot of acidity to this rivalry. What are your thoughts on this one?
First, I need to ask the question, which Clemson are we going to get here? You know, the Clemson that beat Georgia and beat LSU going back to last season, or is this going to be the Clemson that's been dismantled by Florida State?
And the Clemson that almost lost to NC State.
And the Clemson that almost lost to NC State, really. But, you know, I bring that up because last season Clemson went 10-2 with losses to Florida State, and their other loss being against, you guessed it, South Carolina. So really, I bring that up. I don't actually think South Carolina will beat Clemson. I think Clemson is just, you know, got too much star power on both sides of the ball. You know, they have Taj Boyd and Sammy Watkins, probably, you know, top five at their positions in the NCAA. And defensively, Clemson has Vic Beasley, a guy who can kind of match up with Clowney, really, in terms of production. And I think Mike Davis is the X factor, but I think Clemson is the better team. They win 28-24.
Xavier?
I completely agree. I'm glad he brought up Vic Beasley. That is a beast on the other side of the football. But I believe that Clemson will pull this out. I know everybody kind of questions what we're going to see from them every week and ever since that Florida State game. But I believe Taj Boyd will get the job done. I believe in him a little bit more than I do Connor Shaw and the South Carolina offense. And he has one of the best receivers in the country, and Sammy Watkins in his pocket. So I'll take Clemson 24-20.
Round us out, Cole.
Well, you're going to get 3-for-3 on this one, guys. It's going to be definitely Clemson in this game. And I love how you brought up that rivalry between Dabo Sweeney and Steve Spurrier. That just makes a game 10 times even better, especially in a rivalry game. And I love how both you guys mentioned Vic Beasley. Before this season, he was actually projected a third to maybe mid-fourth round draft pick. He is now getting looked at as one of the top 20 draft picks in this season because he is so versatile on that line. He can go down in a defensive line stance and get on the outside corner or play an outside linebacker, do a pass rush, and play zone coverage to where he can get a touchdown. And let's not forget Taj Boyd having 29 touchdowns with 7 interceptions, including 8 rushing touchdowns on top of that, with Sammy Watkins averaging over 1,000 yards in his debut, 14.7 yards averaging per game, 10 touchdowns. Definitely going to be a one-sided game. Mike Davis will have a great game against that defense, but I do think Clemson's going to hold on, win 31-24.
Go ahead and claim your money in your office pool if you had Texas A&M and Missouri as the play-in game for the SEC championship game. I'm willing to bet none of you listening to us online or on the air had that one going into the season, but it's the way it is. Missouri is 10-1, first in the SEC East. Missouri beats Texas A&M at home, no less. They go to the SEC championship game to face the winner of the Alabama-Auburn game we just got done talking about. But if they lose it, it's South Carolina going in, who didn't even have to play a conference foe on the final week of the season. We'll start with you, Xavier. Does Missouri punch their ticket to Atlanta?
as much as it pains me to say this, I think they will. I'm the biggest Mizzou critic, you probably can say, but Mizzou is a really good football team nonetheless. I mean, they have two very talented receivers in Dane Washington and the number one recruit from a year ago, Dorrell Green Beckham. And, you know, not only will they cause problems for Texas A&M in this game, whose defense we don't even have to start talking about. We know how bad they are. But for possibly Alabama or Auburn, whoever they face the next week, these are two very good receivers with the return of James Franklin coming back last week looking pretty good. And even if they don't have James Franklin, Maddie Mock has proven that he can play a pretty good quarterback. So I think Mizzou, with the horrible defense they have to face on the other side, and let's not forget Mizzou's defense is very good as well. They should take care of Giant Football and Texas A&M, I think, around 35 to 20.
Cole?
Now I'm going to just go off on this one. I think Mizzou's defense is not great. They are good. They're a pretty good average defense. They only give up roughly about 20 points a game is what they're averaging, maybe a little less. But you also got to look at that defensive back core in Texas A&M headed out in College Station, one of the worst in college football right now. It doesn't matter if you have Johnny Manziel, who is still playing, putting up big numbers in every game he plays, even though after an embarrassing game with two interceptions at LSU, it's still going to be not even close in this one. You have James Franklin, who has proven himself to be a very good quarterback with 67.3 completion percentage. On top of Matty Mock has proven himself as a good backup while Franklin was hurt. Not to mention Henry Josie is a very good running back. And with that three wide receiving core in LaDainian Washington, Dorrell Green Beckham, and Marcus Lucas, they will be punching their ticket into the SEC Championship in Atlanta in December with a final score of 35-14.
Texas A&M's defensive secondary has basically been exactly what we thought it would be. DeShays are Everett and a bunch of Big 12 cornerbacks. And that's exactly what we've gotten out of the Aggies. What are your thoughts, Seth?
I'm actually a big fan of Tony Hurd Jr. on that Texas A&M secondary. I think he shows a play every now and then, but going back to the game, Mizzou is clearly the better team on paper. They can play at both ends pretty well. Their defense is, you know, a comparable unit, I think. And regardless of whether Franklin or Mock is at quarterback, I think they have, you know, on paper the ability to beat Texas A&M. I'm actually going to pick Texas A&M here. I think that Johnny Manziel kind of, you know, I'm going to put a hockey metaphor here. There are some players that just play better when they get kicked in the shin. And Johnny Manziel right now, he's going to go, you know, play this Mizzou game with a little anger, a little fire. And, you know, you team up that magic, you know, the magic Manziel does with, you know, that fire now that he's a little angry. I think a Texas A&M spoils it a little bit. You know, they have experience spoiling things a little bit. They, you know, spoiled Alabama's perfect season last season. So I think the Manziel legend isn't over, and I think they win this one close, 24-21.
And, of course, the prediction we've all been waiting for, the prediction on the 2013 Iron Bowl being played down on the Plains this afternoon. We'll start with you, Seth. Final score, Bama or Auburn?
It's clearly Bama. I do think Auburn can play. I think they will be able to run the ball against Alabama. I think they'll be able to pass the ball against Alabama just because, you know, contrary to popular belief, I think that Gus Malzahn's offense is capable of throwing it. Nick Marshall has a cannon. He, you know, whether or not it's accurate is another thing, but I think he'll at least get a couple big passing plays, you know, during the game. I think this will be the most dramatic Iron Bowl yet, but I think Alabama ultimately wins it 34-31.
34-31. That's the closest game we've had predicted yet, Seth. I'm not sure how you feel about that.
Well, it's the Iron Bowl. There's magic abound, and really, you know, even if you score ahead 21-0, if the score is 21-0 at halftime, the other team can still win it, as we've seen in past years.
Xavier, what are your thoughts?
Well, I can say one thing for sure. I think we can all agree here. This will be a more entertaining than last year's Iron Bowl, that's for sure. But I think I agree with Seth, though. I think that this game will be very close. I think Nick Marshall is kind of underrated for his passing ability because they do run the ball so well. And I think the score will be somewhere around 38-30
from Xavier Brosfield. Round us out, Cole.
All right. Well, I'm going to agree with them on both of this statement because this is one of the most exciting Iron Bowls we have seen in past years. This is exactly like the type of Iron Bowls we used to see when it was Gene Stallings versus Pat Dye, Bear Bryant, and his day, and his glory day, early when Cam Newton was around, kind of Iron Bowls. This is exactly something that we're going to look forward to. But it is a one-dimensional team. Yes, can Nick Marshall throw the ball? He can. But he isn't as accurate as everyone knows he is. And their receivers are not as good. Sammy Coates, Ricardo Lucas, and Marcus Davis, they're all very decent receivers, each having at least two touchdowns this season. But we're talking about Alabama here, who has a very good run defense, who has a very good, who has an average pass defense. And Alabama will be punching their ticket in Auburn to go back to Atlanta in December with a final score of 38-24. However, I will say Gus Malzahn will win the SEC Coach of the Year award, and I still think Auburn will get an at-large bid to go to the Sugar Bowl.
Now, that'd be fun. I'd love to see somebody like Baylor and Auburn meet up in the Sugar Bowl. Yeah,
that's my projection still.
Both as at-larges. That'd be a lot of fun. That's going to be it for our prediction segment here on the Crimson Tide Game Day Podcast Edition. I want to thank Seth Juniak, Xavier Brosfield, and Cole Thompson for joining us.